This week on RSBNB Update, it's Q&A time with Jack, Timbo, and Sponge. We go over their answers and provide our thoughts on what hits the mark and what doesn't. We also provide a preview of our solution to the problem of rare items and the question of vanity versus quality of life. This is RSBNB Update, episode 919, recorded Thursday, January 26th, 2023. Questions of quality. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we're going back to our roots in that it's a duo episode. It's just Tannis and myself here. Normally, we have a guest on, but this week we figured we'd just go duo on this, talk a little bit about the patch notes, the live stream that Mod Jack was a part of, along with Mods Timbo and Sponge with Mod Huli hosting, and a word about the RS Wiki. I think that about encapsulates what you guys are going to hear about in the next hour and a bit or so.
You know, it's the dynamic duo, Shane. You know. nice and quiet, but you know, sometimes I enjoy when we can kind of get into some stuff like this and you know, kind of bounce things back and forth with each other.
Yeah, because I mean, that was exactly my thought when I saw the live stream this week, is that, you know, there's going to be questions that are on this live stream, but there's also things on that live stream that we've talked about before that I think are going to be interesting to kind of pull back and get the added perspective on, because normally it was only the Mod Jack live streams that we saw, but this one adds Mod Timbo and Mod Sponge to it as well. So we're going to do that, and if you want to follow along, you can find full show notes at update.show. I'm in game at Shane12088. Tannis is in game at Tannis79. And you can also join our friends chat, Bits Bytes. We also have a Discord with a bunch of RSBNB Update community members, producers, and whatnot are all in there. Just visit rsbnb.com/Discord, and you can join that as well. But we're going to start off, as I mentioned, with the patch notes this week because, well, they're still patching things in for the death cost update, as happened as the first update of 2023. And we're going to start off with the corrected death reclaim values for Erithor's Grimoire, Ascension Fragments, and Fragment Arrows and Bolts. And the interesting part about this is that when this update first landed, you could have an inventory full of Ascension Fragments, and they would have a sky-high value to them. I don't know whether the Grimoire was too high or too low. I don't have one of those, but lo and behold, these values have been corrected, and it kind of speaks to the death rework as a whole of being this huge update that they put out, and you know, we've only seen minor tweaks and pushes around the edges, pushes in one way or another, I'd say. So it's been good.
And that's always a sign of a quality update, right? Like, it had the appropriate time in QA. It wasn't rushed. It wasn't, you know, everything is going right. And of course, we see a little bit of, you know, little tweaks here and there with some patch notes. But for the most part, done very well. And I've never died more ever as I have in the last 2 weeks. Me and Death are getting tight again, you know.
Yeah,
but it's cool because it ain't breaking the bank. It's like, oh, 2,600 coins. Oh, I can do that. All right.
Yeah.
I got you.
And, you know, on this, I'll mention this, and I reported this as well, and people who were at the roundtable last weekend would have saw this. I perhaps foolishly decided to do an Araxor kill because that was my Reaper while we were doing our roundtable, and my Ring of Death activated, and the dot at the end of it was preventing me from opening and having that Araxi chest visible. So that's another one of those things that I think hopefully will be fixed soon, because that was kind of annoying to be under that dot, the death, Ring of Death dot, and not be able to open the Araxi chest. But that's been reported,
man.
It's been reported by others as well. So
you didn't get You didn't get your loot?
No, I got I got the loot. I just had to click really quickly, open the chest, click bank really quickly, and then the next tick that would happen from the Ring of Death would close the chest interface. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They also corrected a calculation issue that would occur when switching between tabs in the death preview, and this was only a UI issue and did not affect the cost of the death itself. Dyed fractured staff variants have been updated to now correctly display the intended cost and item value and death cost. Also fixed a small issue with members only items in the death overflow bag being claimable in free-to-play worlds. And the last one, fixed an issue where items stored with death weren't refreshing when claiming them via gravestone. And that's, of course, something a lot of people don't realize, is that you can still go back and claim through gravestone as well. So, once again, minor teething issues around this update, nothing too substantial. Good to see them being patched in the subsequent Fortnite after update launch.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move on to general patch notes. You can now send quick chat messages through a private message to a friend in the lobby without it crashing your game client.
Always a good thing.
Tool leprechauns no longer note elder saplings, and we had a problem with this with Calquits earlier in October, November, I think. So I guess that one snuck away, but when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, not too many people plant elder saplings because there's only one patch and the seeds are still silly expensive. Sign of the Porter charges will no longer bang flowers from Het's Oasis bushes. Yeah, you'd burn through those porters mighty quick if you did that. The Skull Scepter's teleport option, or left-click option, is now teleport. And this is something that you don't get in other games. And I feel like it's always wonderful and fun to point out these patch notes, because in other games, you don't get these kind of quality of life updates to these items that are decade plus old.
You know, I was just thinking about that before the show, looking at certain products and going, this needs a software update, and it would be really easy to do, and yet it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just like literally just before the show saying, I was like, yeah, and I know that Jagex is a little bit bigger, but seriously, there's like 30 patch notes every single week. Like, y'all could do it if you wanted to.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, I think, and Stowe's kind of in this category as well, is that they patch weekly despite having quarterly content drops effectively with that. Granted, they're not as regular as voluminous as Jagex patch weeks, but I don't see very many games do the level of patching and backwards support for these kind of updates that we have. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes everything so much easier, right? Like, you want it to be recognizable in the feel that you have, but you don't want it to play like it did 15 years ago.
Exactly.
Necessarily, right? Like,
exactly. Players can once again receive Master Clue Scrolls when killing NPCs. And, you know, I was always under the impression that the bulk of Master Clues came in from existing easy to elite drops on that. I don't remember getting many Master Clues from NPCs. But in any case, players are now removed upon taking their helmets off in Dondakin's Gold Mine, Safety First. Another huge one from all these years back.
Yeah, that's way back.
Little fixes around the edges. Quest Point Capes perk can now be activated from the Max Cape perk interface. The left click option for the Shard of Erebus is now wield, and both the Shard of Zaros and the Shard of Erebus now have a tooltip which explains their effects. Kind of wishing we got more use of the Shard of Erebus in Elder God Wars. I remember taking it to Extinction and was hoping we'd get more out of it there, but I guess we did not.
Well, yeah, because we got used to the you know, real tangible effects of the other shards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then we also had the ring, which I guess was the main thing that we had from Elder God Wars. So. Mm-hmm. Now here's one. Here's one that's really important. Slightly adjusted the health scaling of wilderness combat events to make more room for players to meet their personal progress in the required time. Personal progress, not group progress. This is good. This is good, I think. One of the things that always, I think, came up with these is that there's always a chance of not landing on the right kind of combat role, or the right kind of combat system, or maybe you weren't 100% fluent in the combat you were trying to do. There was a chance you could go to one of these and not meet the target that you needed to meet. Overall, I think this is a good change in even from my perspective, think this was needed when we look at the specifically the combat wilderness flash events. So thumbs up on that one.
More on that later.
Yes, very much so. The ability book will now remember the last tab that you had open on mobile devices. And then here's one that's actually kind of annoying me. Daily challenge notifications have been added for all players on desktop. So every day after reset, there will be a red 3 next to the adventures menu.
Telling That's been you to there do- for quite a while, it seems like.
Yeah, but it was just in the patch notes here. And I feel like this is something that emerged probably this month, or do you think it was...
Yeah, no, I think it was the beginning. It was definitely this month, like this year, because I remember as soon as I came back from... Well, actually, it was on Fresh Start, too, but I noticed it on the main.
Yeah, but on Fresh Start, you were doing it in stats that were under 99, whereas here, yes. I only think it did it if it was under 99.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, there's always a big 3 there now.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Like, I can see why. I can see why that was done. But am I about to call for a toggle on this? because the thing is, every day it's the one of the quickest ones I can do. It's divination, and if I want to go get the daily reward from that, I will. But some days I just don't want to.
You know, yeah. When it comes to a maxed player, then maybe it's you toggle that just like you toggle the skills that are available, something along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't know. It hasn't bothered me, so I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean,
it might be your picadillo.
Right. And I mean, at worst, it's just one click into the UI and then it's gone, right?
Yeah.
And this could open up another can of worms. You know, let's have another once over on the settings UI and consider what kind of notifications we get and that sort of thing. But anyways, I digress. Then the last patch note of the week added a loot beam to chewed bones, which come from the barbarian training near where the first mithril dragons were added, amongst all things. Mm. So
I could have used that about a month and a half ago.
Oh, fresh start?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. You did barbarian training there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I see. I didn't know that was viable still in 2023.
I had to do it for something else. I can't remember off the top of my head. I had to do it. I do remember that.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well,
with that, let's move on to the live stream. This was an interesting live stream. There's only a handful of questions that they went through here because it was largely discussion-based. It was with Mod Jack, Mod Sponge, and Mod Timbo, and Mod Huli hosted the live stream. It took place on January 25th. We started off with, I think, the elephant in the room that everybody wanted to know about, and we're just going to dive right into this one, and this is the topic for the player avatar refresh. And you know, it took Mod Huli a couple of sentences to get to it, but it's good to have this out on record now, that the player avatar refresh is not in the plan for 2023, and it is safe to consider it shelved.
It is Weekend at Bernie's dead. Like, you might be able to prop it up and drag it around, but this thing is deader than a doornail. And I'm surprised that it was so heavily asked about, like, that was the first thing.
Well, and the reason for that is, and we've talked about this with the complicated comp rework, people weren't for that until they saw the pictures of it, but we saw samples of the player avatar rework, of what some of the outfits could look like, what some of the faces could look like, and it was sold by Mod Iroh, the art director, at the time. And, you know, it looked wonderful. We have to say that. It looked wonderful.
Yeah.
They said it amounted to too high of a scope at the technical level. It could happen, but there's no plans to push it forward as of yet.
See, and when I hear that, that is kind of like code for saying, at the end of the day, it's always going to cost more than we think it's going to be worth.
Oh yeah, there was a discussion about that too on this live stream in a different way.
I mean, that's just all there is to it, you know? I mean,
yeah. And what it effectively amounted to was that if it were to be done in a reasonable amount of time, they said there'd have to be two avatars. You'd have to have a choice between the old avatar system and the new avatar system, or they'd have to have some sort of cutoff. And that every cosmetic that we have and know now would not work with the new system, and you would not be able to mix and match outfits.
See, and given the limitations, I feel like this is the right decision. Like, let's leave the stuff alone.
And then you can venture out further and say that, you know, hey, if you're going to go even further than that, if you really do want to, and this is us talking now, they didn't say this on the live stream, being clear about this, the answer to this would be is that if this is going to become the stumbling block that it is, you reserve the avatar rework for something akin to a RuneScape 4, which, again, they've said there's no plan for anything like that happening in the future either.
Now, that one, though, I take with a grain of salt. Because no one is ever going to tell you that they have a plan for their next version
right.
of their product.
And, you know, in reality, it would be another game based on the RuneScape IP. That's what it would be.
Yeah.
That's what it would be. It wouldn't be an iteration like we saw from RS2 to RS3 or classic to modern RS.
Right.
Yep. And you know, there's still unannounced projects inside Jagex.
Yeah, I mean, that one, to me, is more likely than just getting it in RS3, right? Like, that's never going to happen. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, and
I definitely see an RS4 before I see a avatar rework.
Right, and the only part that makes me feel really disappointed about this is that if you were a customer of the 20-year anniversary book, the last chapter of that book is on the avatar rework with looking to the future for it.
But, you know, sometimes you got to understand, like, different leaders are going to have different focuses, right? Like, That's just the way it is. There's
a different
emphasis on different things.
And you know, turning the page back, player avatar refresh was in the scope of the Mod Warden time.
Yes.
With the kind of people that he brought in for that.
Yes.
Which
because
is not where
he
we are at now.
Exactly. That's the first thing I started thinking of. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just different priorities with different leadership. You know, for Mod Warden, the avatar was an important thing because he wanted to
it
have
was
the
your
game
character center. It was you.
Yes, he wanted it more to be more centered around that. We're just not at the same place anymore, which, and honestly, like, I'm kind of fine either way.
We talked about this off the air this week, you and I, is that, you know, we very much loved what Maude Warden did, but we feel like, you know, having a year of this approach now with Maude Keeper and Maude Jack as lead designer, we feel like we're in good hands right now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, I guess I never could say that I saw this coming, because I would have never guessed, you know, at an outcome like this. But if there was someone that I would have picked to kind of follow Maude Warden, I couldn't imagine a better person than Maude Jack. Because Maude Jack's always been the guy that I said, you know, you might
not
like
it, but it's going to be the right thing. There's a difference between EP and lead designer, right? Maude Keeper's EP, yeah. Maude Warden was EP. Maude Osborne was lead designer before. That's Maude Jack now.
You know, but Maude Warden was a different kind of EP. I really feel like he was a little bit more
hands-on, captain hands-on kind of thing. Whereas this approach now is rely on the team. Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, there's a bigger fingerprint from Maude Jack than there ever was from Maude Osborne. Right? Like, Maude Osborne, I knew, you could see it with him when it would come down to certain, like, narrative things.
Yes, and that's a difference.
Like that.
Maude Osborne's, and he was wonderful too, his background was in story. Maude Jack's background was in systems. You go back, you know, to some of the updates that he's worked on and whatnot, right? So.
Yeah.
And that's a difference and why we're having the feeling that we have now with how this is all set up. And, you know, I didn't look into how the community felt about this. I feel like...
Me neither.
I feel like, you know, player avatar refresh. I feel like everybody knew it was in this state from the very beginning, or from the time when we stopped hearing about it. So...
It's swimming with the fishes.
Unfortunately, so.
Got knocked off the tobacco dock.
Oh, God.
The Cambridge mob put some cement shoes on it.
Oh, boy.
Isn't it coming up?
Oh, player avatar refresh, swimming with the fishies. After this, they went to skill cape perks. Question behind this, are there any plans to change any of the skill cape perks to make them more useful, like woodcutting or prayer, for example? And the interesting part about this is that it turned into a really neat design discussion between Maude Jack, Timbo, and Sponge on this. And for what it's worth, the prayer cape and its perk provides the effect of having two lit incense burners without needing to have them lit when you use an altar, which is very, very niche. And the woodcutting perk provides an extra chance to get nests, I think. I think that's what that one does. And Maude Jack sees them as level 99 skill unlocks, but they're a little bit convoluted because you have to wear the cape to have the unlock. So the answer to this is, why not just make them things that you unlock as passives at level 99 for that skill? And then with this, it leads to a wider question of what's the core aim of a skill cape perk? And I'm so glad that this live stream got the feature on the news post this week, because this is a different way of thinking that I don't think many of the player base will have thought about these sorts of things before as. And from that, it's not just, you know, providing a little bit extra for something that you wear. It's actually saying, well, do we even need these skill cape perks? What if we just, you know, took everything that was a skill cape perk and had it as a passive unlock at 99 or 120, then let you have these things as cosmetic items, and then, oh, here, you're saving, you know, 28 bank spaces, 56 if you have all 120s with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to me, what I liked about this was it was the exact right question. Not the beginning question, but the question that they came back with was, well, what should the purpose of a
skill cape
be?
Yeah.
Like, to me, I was like, oh. And trying to keep that in mind when you're asking these kinds of questions about any content, right? Like,
yeah,
trying to use that framing. I thought that was really telling, and I couldn't agree more, because I think we've seen that work in the past, that these kinds of unlocks should be passive unlocks, character unlocks, versus, you know, an item that you necessarily have to wear.
Yeah, and then you can really see that with smithing, and this is one that was specifically highlighted in the question. Should the smithing cape be something that introduces a new playstyle? Because that perk provides the effect of whenever an unfinished smithing item is reheated, the next strike will generate +5 base progress, which in turn makes your smithing, if you choose to play this way, from 99 to 120 that much quicker, which at that point, once again, passive for the entire skill. And with that, that's pretty much a new training method that is unlocked by wearing a cape. And this is the reason this wasn't done, or there hasn't been any, you know, quick fixes to these capes, is that Modjack very much wants to take the same lens that they did with the Garden of Charid, where rather than just fixing a couple of them and making them good, they could just completely revamp this entire premise behind it and add something new to the game while fixing something that was a pain point in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back in time, I feel like the skill cape perks have been something that have been discussed for many, many years as being things that could be updated, right?
Oh, definitely, because even when they first came out, there were some that were kind of meh. And then the next big push, I think, that we saw, once the max cape, you could put, what was it, three of them on.
And then you had the one on the cape stand at Anachronia.
Right, and so at that point, you kind of, I don't know, it kind of introduces the idea of doesn't necessarily have to be coupled.
Yeah, and I mean, with that, you also just ask yourself the defense one, how many people have the defense skill cape perk on their stand at Anachronia? Well, maybe at 99 defense, everybody gets a free sign then when they die once.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And same thing with agility. That one prevents you from failing any agility obstacles. Archaeology one lets you access the relic power at banks, and the master one provides extra progress on discovery. And you know, we can just go through this list on and on and on. The cooking one prevents all food from being burnt. Effectively eliminates cooking gauntlets. I always use this one whenever I'm cooking for a yak track task, because that's just the simplest way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
The crafting one, once again, this is a weird one, and you'd be remiss if you forgot what this one did. This cape perk provides unlimited thread and removes the need for thread when crafting leather, and provides a 0.75% chance to cut all gems of the same type in the player's inventory at once. The first uncut gem the crafting cape triggers on can also trigger the portable crafter and crystal chisel effects. However, additional uncut gems that are cut by this cape, the perks lose a chance to be saved by a portable crafter and duplicated by a crystal chest. Yada, yada, yada. And that's a mouthful there. And with that, you have two, maybe almost three different potential things you could unlock at 99 with that.
Yeah. To be fair, though, the only viable one, in my opinion, it's the cutting, the gem cutting.
Yeah,
right. Like, I mean, thread and leather.
Who uses that?
Yeah, especially at 99. Come on now.
And then here's another idea for divination. It provides it increases the spring duration by 30 seconds. What if starting at level 80, spring duration started creeping up with it, providing a +30-second boost at level 99, right?
Yeah.
Another thing you could work in right there. A farming cape, instantly harvest all resources. Once again,
can be done
as a passive.
Definitely.
Fire-making light source. Well, let's be honest here. Fire-making needs some work.
Yeah. All around.
And with that, you could then say, okay, what would make level 99 fire making more interesting and, you know, provide some extra dynamics behind it. Herblore one cleans all herbs.
Not bad.
Just, you know, set that to a tick time of zero and clean herbs instantly with that at 99. So you get the idea. I've gone through pretty much half the skills here, and they're all in more ways than one things that could be unlocked. It's a question of at that point, and looking at this way, why do we need the cape to do that? Why not just, you know, have them as passives once you reach level 99? And then with that...
I think it's a good question.
Yeah. And then with that, you really... You know where we go next with this discussion?
What is that?
At what point do you start adding things beyond level 99 to skills in skills that don't actually go to 120?
Well, that's actually a really good question.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, if we have the Master of All cape, granted, they always want there to be something tangible, a new tangible training method between 99 and 120. But we already kind of have this for cooking the Primal Feast. You need a cooking potion and 115 cooking to be able to put it together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You get the idea behind this, is that this just opens so many more questions about RuneScape design, about what happens at 99 and beyond. And it kind of also, I think this was perhaps the question that goes most into what we talked about with Mod Jack on our endgame episode. So before we move on to the next question in the live stream, we're going to thank some Patreon supporters here this week. In particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvidzel, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Elo Matey, Enrique V, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, OTR Gamer, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. There we offer three tiers of support. For as little as a dollar a month, you'll get a mention in our show notes, and you will gain access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits, extra bonus shows that we put out at the start of each and every month. We discuss a myriad of topics on these ones. Last year, some of the popular ones included tier lists, including the Dailyscape tier list, the PVM boss tier list, and the skill tier list. We also, of course, have ones relating to holiday events. And just wrapping up right now, we have a poll running on Patreon for our next one, and it's looking like we'll be discussing what if drops weren't as rare in RuneScape, which is very pertinent to one of the questions in this week's live stream. So if you want to hear that episode when it comes out, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. We also have a VIP tier for where as little as $3 a month. You can get a special rank on Discord and chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo version of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So thanks so much, everybody. It means the world to us.
Thanks.
All right. Next one's a topic very near and dear to our hearts, and that's, can combat be made more accessible?
Yeah. This was kind of weird, and it lost me a little bit, so...
All right. Well, let's go through it then. The person asking can't handle how many actions per minute are required for high level PVM, and that's basically what they said, is that, you know, hey, what can we do to make combat more accessible? I can't do what needs to be done to be, you know, an ace at high level PVM. And the easy answer to this that came from the panel was to, you know, just make all of combat more accessible. And this is where it rings totally true. And for every difficult boss that I have done, in my PVMing kick, this is what I have found myself doing. The focus of combat right now is on the action bar or your keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Combat should be more about boss mechanics and less of a rhythm game. That came from Mod Timbo.
And that part I totally agreed with. But then it was like in the next breath they were talking about, like, well, it doesn't matter how many actions you're doing. And I'm like, actually, it kind of does if you're...
Well, the game's hard capped with the tick rate out of how many actions you can do.
That was the other thing that confused me, because that's what I thought. That was my thought exactly, was, well, there's only so many you can do, so there has to be a limit. You know what I mean? Like, so I was having trouble squaring that, because it sounded to me like they were saying, well, you know, have as many as you can possibly have. It's fine. That's not the problem.
Yeah, and, well, let's see if we can get to that. And this is one point that you see in the PVM community. They said the general feeling of the community is that an unlimited ceiling, like an unlimited skill ceiling, is good. And then they said, on the other hand, hard capping APM isn't the right solution. So what that would mean is that you're going to arbitrarily tie someone like David's hands behind themselves so they can't be as effective.
But they are tied because of, like you said, the hard cap on tick rate.
Yeah. But the thing is that it takes a long time to be able to get into that mode to actually... And I think that where the disconnect is that the people who are doing these rotations, and the rotation that specifically comes to mind is the rotation with Bow of the Last Guardian, the Dine arrows and the other arrows that we have, those rotations have to be tick perfect. And if you do that, range with that bow is excellent. It really is. But the problem is that you have to be right on cue when we're talking metronome levels for that. So what I see them talking about with this is that they don't want it to be so that it has to be like that. It needs to be more based on the mechanics and such, going back and forth on that is what I see. And they also highlighted the issue of the performance gap between sweaty and non-sweaty methods being about 200 to 300%, which I think I agree with. And they said the problem isn't that ceiling, it's the performance, in that you should be able to put in more to get more, but you shouldn't be able to put in 100% more effort and get 500% more reward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't see how you fix this without upsetting the PVM community.
Because the entire
bit of prestige from what I've seen in the RuneScape PVM community is maxing out your DPM so you get those kill times lower. And where you follow from that is, if you're using magic, you wind up using 4-tick auto-attacking and the staff. You wind up, if you're using melee, you wind up using, you know, 4 or 5 different switches for that. And I see that as putting in that extra effort and getting rewarded by that much. So I don't see how you fix this and make this more accessible without adding more onto the top end. Because as has been demonstrated by people in our community and everywhere else, We have absolute levels of power now that we never had before, and at this point the only places really, really being used is to go and kill Zamorak out in range. And High Telos and High Glacier, amongst other things. So make combat more accessible, I guess. But at the same time, if you do that, I see this as being a problem where you just add on more to the top as well. And I don't know how you fix that.
Well, I don't think you fix it with the system or making changes there. I think almost like you have to fix it from adding the right content.
Oh, that okay.
Can be accessible, you know, well, let's just face it. Like, there are certain bosses there's certain things that are not going to be accessible in the
for
way
you
that
like the Carapac lightning attack,
right? So it, and I just don't see that changing. I mean, you know,
yeah,
there are things they can do on the edges with, you know, we've talked about before, with more audio cues, more things like that,
contrasts and whatnot.
plenty of stuff could be done in that regard, but nothing in their, you know, nothing in the other way that we've been talking about. I think that requires just more content that has different mechanics, like what they're saying.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was in this question they said that what they'd effectively be looking at is an iteration on EOC. And there was a bit of a chuckle on the panel saying, "Oh, we can't necessarily do that in a knee jerk manner because of what happened last time."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to mention this now.
Wouldn't that be the greatest irony of all?
I know.
All?
And we're going to talk about this now. We're going to talk about this more in what we've been doing. But people at the roundtable know that I've been dabbling in old school for quests and whatnot. And one thing I greatly appreciate about EOC is that if you have a bronze dagger and a bronze sword on EOC, you know those are going to do the exact same amounts of damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Damage is leveled out per tier. Whereas with the old combat system, each weapon did different kinds of damage and whatnot. Or different levels of damage, rather. And there was the different wacky version of the combat formula back then. It's better now. And what I've learned, I think, for the combat system that we have is that if you really want, you know, the traditional RuneScape experience combat-wise, I don't think it's old-school combat. I can be 100% honest. I don't think it's old-school combat. I think it's legacy mode. I think that's the traditional RS combat experience. Because
is old school combat different than legacy?
Yeah, it is in terms of, you know, the HP values and such, in terms of how the weapons work damage wise, in that, as I was mentioning, you know, a dagger does less damage than a sword or a battle axe or two-hander, right? Because you remember in old school, two-handers would do more damage than everything else, right? But they were relentlessly slow. So the result was people went for a scimitar because that was the balanced option. Whereas in our combat system, whether using ERC or legacy, a scimitar has the same damage as a two-handed sword, as does a dagger.
Okay.
They're just different styles, so to speak. Like one's a stab, one's a slash. And that's where it's different in our combat system. Then you can factor in things like special attacks and whatnot. But it's a level of consistency, I think. And the reason I mention this is that the more and more that I think about it, aside from a few of the bosses out there, and I'm talking about bosses like your hard mode bosses like Carapac, Glacor, Telos, Zamorak, and Raid, Solak, Virago. Those bosses all need EOC and work very well with it, right? But at the same time, I think one thing we've learned over the last year or so is that legacy is fine for everything else in between. And as such, maybe that's kind of where they need to be going with this in terms of balancing, is finding a way to make it as accessible as legacy without needing to have, you know, the layers of understanding things in EOC. And you can compare this with other MMOs too as well, right? Like you compare your RS keybinds with something like ESO or Star Trek Online.
Mm-hmm.
The keybinds on ESO and Star Trek Online are much, much simpler than the keybinds on RS.
Oh yeah. Oh, what? Yes. Greatly.
And that's where we get to combat being made more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to take that same approach and look at what other MMOs do, you wind up in a situation where you wind up hurting the people at the top end of the combat spectrum here too. So I don't know what the answer is for this one.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't either. I mean, I'm afraid that there just isn't maybe a good answer on it, you know?
Well, and you know, to go back to the legacy discussion, I got a message from David this week. You know where I'm going with this. He messaged me that he's able to get 1,000+ kills per hour at Ripper Demons in the wilderness on legacy
mode.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And this is using Crypt Bloom, Animate Dead, and a cannon, cannon and blood barrage. So legacy is not the slouch it's made out to be. We'll just say that.
No, it turns out. It turns out. It is not.
All right. Max Guild. Are there any plans to revisit the Max Guild and give it more usage? And the answer to this was the goal is not to segregate people who are maxed from those who are not. And they said this question implicitly assumes that keeping players away from each other is good. But on the other hand, the Artisan's Workshop is a good example of how it would put all of the smiths together and, you know, create a tailored area for smithing. So the sense of what a max guild is that it should be a hub of everything and everything that could be needed near a bank, which is what players want. And the answers that came up with this was, you know, let's put an invention machine in there. Let's put a beeswax machine in there, that sort of thing. Daily challenge hub, so on and so forth, right? So it's again, I think the sense I got from the panel here is that, you know, maybe we don't need to do something like this, right? But I think at the same time, the players really want something as well on this front.
What I got from this was like, I don't think it was the wrong thing to do at the time. In fact, I think it was the right thing to do at the time.
Right, because it was within the mold of Prif, as in, you know, Prif being the endgame city, right? The city you should never have to leave.
Yep, exactly. And in that regard, Max was great and it was special. I mean, everyone you knew was maxed anyway, so I never felt segregated. If there's any segregation, it's segregating you from your alt. You know, you weren't being segregated from actual friends or people. That being said, I don't think they're wrong in wanting to make it so that everyone is together. We saw the benefits from that in Fresh Start. The whole hub thing, I mean, I do think that is the right approach. So now we just end up with yet another kind of useless guild. Just kind of a bummer. But I guess that's where we're at.
I mean, it's the closest GE teleport. And if anything, that's what you're going to think of it like, unless you're, you know, running Luck of the Dwarves, like the actual ring.
Yeah, I mean, I would still use the boss portal, but...
Right, and that's actually interesting on that, is that you can actually attune that boss portal to bosses you haven't killed, whereas the ones at War's Retreat have to have been killed.
Yeah.
So there's that, and there's also the argument that Croesus is actually a better max guild boss portal than using one at War's Retreat. So that's an interesting idea on that front as well. And... I mean, I don't get the pull of having everything in one location where you never need to leave. I don't get that as a RS player. Do you?
I mean, yeah, but I've spent many double XP weekends, you know, in that mode where you want to stay put, you want to put up numbers, you know. Yeah.
And I feel like this is a question that's not going away, because it's something that always comes up because there was talk about, you know, maybe doing some kind of prototype on this at some point, but I don't know. I personally, I honestly think you can just leave it as is, and because there's just so many other things in Prif that are worth using still, I think.
Yeah, I don't, you know, unfortunately, I think that if you saw any movement with this, you would see an invention bench, right? Like, that's the only kind of things you can look here. And if I'm reading what they're saying right, that isn't going to happen, because they would just see that as yet
as taking
way to segregate people.
As taking more reason for you, you know, to actually go to an invention.
Or yeah.
Taking the reason away for you to go to an invention bench or go to the invention guild.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think what we have is what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't see it as a problem, and I don't think it's the biggest issue plaguing RS3 presently.
And that's where I'm at, too, right? Like, I was kind of surprised that this weighed is high up there as it did, because, yeah, this is something we talked about when War's Retreat was coming out, and, you know, we wondered about it. But since then, it didn't turn out to be that big of a deal.
Maybe it's because the PVMers were the ones who are making the most noise about it to get more features there, and that they now have in War's Retreat.
I mean, that could be. I mean, it's a little less populated, but still, I mean, if I'm going, yeah, like you said, like if I'm going to GE or whatever, I'm just hitting my max, portal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's still the closest bonfire if you're going to...
Yeah, for cooking, training. Cooking or yeah. Fire making. Yeah. Unless yeah. you're using a portable brazier, but that's different.
Yeah.
So, all right. Then here's the question I think that you and I want to talk about most. It was one of the ones that was discussed in a very small way here on this. It's been 4 years since the mining and smithing rework. Are there any plans to bring craftable magic and range armor to the respective skills and bring the skills into parity?
Yeah.
Well, the good news on this is that Mod Jack feels it's a high priority idea.
That was reassuring. You know?
I sense a butt coming. That,
I don't know. Someday I want them to be as excited and appreciative of their hard work with mining and smithing as we all are. You know what I mean? Like, I always feel like it's one of those.
It would have been a success had it had the framing of being two new skills. Like, if mining and smithing did not exist in the game already, and it had the marketing behind it that archaeology had, oh yeah, it would have been successful. Because they were basically two new skills.
Yeah, and I'm for me, you know, I still see them as super successful, and obviously Mod Jack has to in some way. This is a high.
I think priority. There was somewhere he said that, you know, that they were happy, very pleased with the work that they did on him. It's just a question of time investment, I think.
Yeah, and to me, like, that is good time investment, and we do need that for crafting. We do need this parity. I think that would be really important, because we're at a point where we need that kind of equipment. We need ulterior means, and this comes up too about, you know, with the way that certain drops and certain equipment come in the game.
Yeah.
So we need more ways for that to come in. And also, we have a couple of skills here that are not
wood
that
cutting, fletching,
useful.
Crafting, rune crafting. Well, rune crafting is useful for the runes, but rune crafting, I think, is where people think the magic armor would come in.
Probably.
But in reality, you could just do it with crafting,
you could
wood cutting, and fletching. You know, put the ranged armor and the magic armor in crafting. And then just have an imbue component from rune crafting. You know, you wouldn't need to do too much rune crafting on that. And they say that there can't be a promise that a single update will do this, but it's a goal over the medium to long term. on this one, because, you know, as it stands right now, combat equipment wise, outside of the fletching skill, the only really thing that you have that's useful are the backriminal bolts and the dine arrows. There's no craftable bows, there's no, you know, craftable armor and crafting for magic or ranged, right? So I mean, I think the simplest way to go about this would be to just copy Elder Rune and copy Masterwork at levels 85 and 90 and put that in the crafting skill, and then just have, you know, it could even be the same set of armor. It's just a different imbue. One imbue comes from rune crafting with a drop you get from somewhere, and then one imbue comes from the fletching skill with a drop you get from somewhere else.
Yeah, and the same thing happens if you look at Masterwork. You have to get those essence if you want to make them.
And then just add, you know, tier 85 tank armor that is with a player craftable imbue at a lower level from those skills, and there you go. It could even, again, be the same stub, as in, you know, just have a generic, you know, tier 85 armor that becomes a robe when you put one thing on, and then it becomes leather when you put something else on it, right?
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, alter the constituent components of it, but there you go. And I think you could do that without, you know, doing the full wood cutting rework, without doing the full crafting rework.
Because we've talked before, like, there's very, it wouldn't actually take much to rework those skills in a decent way that would make them feel different.
Yeah, we do have a monthly bit on that matter where we looked at those, actually. So I think it's needed, and, you know, there's just something in my head that says that, you know, maybe we won't see this year, but I think when you look at magic in particular, on the tank armor side and specifically the power armor side, it's really needed because magic armor is so darn expensive right now. And sure, yeah, people who kill next will, you know, say, hey, you better make it so that, you know, this is worth my while, because as it is right now, Virtus equipment is still, you know, I think north of 150 mil for the entire set last time I looked. And that's tier 80 power armor.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have, and you know, it feels weird saying this, but you'd have to factor that into the cost analysis of how you do this, that you'd have to make sure that somebody who, you know, was farming next would still have a way to go on this. And I think they already do that with Masterwork. And, you know, maybe on that point,
yes,
maybe you just lean into the same kind of Masterwork components.
That's what I was going to say, because it still worked the same way. Like, it didn't drop Torva prices. Like, those things fluctuate anyway, but it didn't have anything to do with Masterwork coming up.
Yeah. So and you know, the more and more we talk about this, I think that's the blueprint on the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, as much as we would like woodcutting nodes to be non-competitive, I think there was a game jam project for that last year, and I don't know how complex that would be to go into game. But if we're talking about reworking woodcutting, it's that plus a couple of new hatchets.
And we're done here.
Yeah. Exactly. Fletching, I think, just needs a bow or a crossbow or something, like a weapon that goes onto that. And I think we got really lucky with archaeology, adding the Masterwork spear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, and this is a preview. Actually, no, I'll save it for the What Have We Been Doing section. I don't think I mentioned it last week, so I'll say it in What Have We Been Doing, but people can guess on that. Anyways, next question. What lessons has the team learned from the Wilderness Reborn content? Oh, boy. All right, here we go. Here's the big one.
Here we go.
From Mod Jack. Jagex's takeaway is that the Wilderness Reborn hasn't quite worked out. They wanted to substitute the risk of going into the wilderness by moving it from PvP to PvM risk, but it'd say that strategy did not work out, and it's actually more annoying now. You can attest to that.
I didn't want to say this. I hate to say I told you so, but yeah.
And for anybody wondering what we're talking about, after the wilderness content dropped, I sent Tanis into the wilderness to test something. I forget what it was, but you got smacked by a pair of something or other that killed you right away in doing that. And this is one threat. So,
yeah, it was lots and lots of abyssal everythings all at once,
right,
all the time. Yeah.
What they have decided on with this, and it's still in the design phases of how it's going to be balanced and implemented, but they are going to remove the wilderness threat system and adjust mechanics that tie into that.
I think this is going to be good. I mean, we don't know when that's going to happen. I do think that, like, this is the best thing that they can do. You know, other than just repurposing the whole area, which they kind of already...
Yeah, they said the biggest problem would be the Mandrith tasks. Because that's really built around it.
It is. The only thing, though, it's like... I don't think that's... I mean, I love Slayer. And I don't do those that much. I don't know anyone that does.
Interesting.
Oh.
And for me, I thought that this was going to force me and maybe make me like Slayer, but it didn't. It didn't. So, I don't know. It didn't work for me either. I got to say on that. So, I think the highlight of this entire wilderness expansion that we had at the tail end of last year was probably the storyline and the flash events.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what this comes down to on this. And with that... they said the alternative is to try and redesign the threat system, but with that, it might not work. But the feedback they received says that people just aren't engaging with the risk-reward element to it. So they made the decision to effectively turn off threat, since it's more of a nuisance than a positive. They're scoping out the various alternatives now from a design perspective. No timeline. No timeline as of yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just yesterday, I was trying to remember, I'm like, what is... It's some kind of stone that will negate this threat.
Obsidian palm stone.
Yeah. And with that, you're already neglecting it anyway. It's kind of like, you know.
And, you know, they're dirt cheap with how many flash events that are done. At that point, you know, why trouble the people who don't have them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree with this. I think it's kind of a disappointment because... the wilderness was always built around the area that, it's going to be dangerous. This is where you go for your highest XP rates in game, right?
Nope.
And, you know, I think if there was the bigger budget, you know what I think they should have done with this? I think they should have just built an entire new area, like a new continent, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Kind of like they did with Anachronia, and just completely revamp the area and find some hand-waving mechanic, you know, to bring back the old 4 and 3 cities, right? I think that would have been the way to go.
Yes. And
for the wilderness rework that removes PvP in that, you know, you can still maybe find some element of danger to it, but wouldn't it have been more interesting with an expansion to have a new continent, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah.
So That's kind of where I'm at on that, and I think they made the right decision for that, and we'll walk away from this and say that the flash events and the quest line were the highlights out of that. So
yeah,
it is what it is. Next up, keeping on the topic of the wilderness, the Dark Onyx Core, the items that buff things like Grace of the Elves. And they say it's not time-gated on purpose, it's because of how it's tied to the flash events. And it's not intrinsically too rare, it's just that, you know, you have to do so many flash events to have a role in order to have a chance at getting it. They're not planning a buff to the drop rate, since it would have to be buffed quite substantially. And the sense is that there's a lot of feedback on this. It's coming from Iron Man players. But I think we can also throw our voices into this one too, so go ahead.
This is where I differed from the mods.
Yeah.
Because I definitely disagree.
Yeah, me too.
I felt that number one, this would have been a different conversation if it was a combat drop. They take it differently. They listen and they're like, well, maybe, I don't know. And this one, it was just like, no.
And I don't
get that, because I think it is too rare, and I don't think it's just Iron Man. Why do we need to, try to find different solutions to the problem?
I mean, the item is a skilling item worth max cash.
Yeah, and we're trying to find solutions on a staff that is 1.5 bill, right? That's too rare. Okay, well, if that's too rare, how is this not too rare? If that requires someone to play 18 hours of PVM a day, how does this not require the same amount in skilling? Like, why? I don't know. To me, they look very equivalent, and they're not being treated equivalent at all.
Yeah, and I mean, you can even take one step back, and for anybody wondering, this is the best way always to make your point with these sort of things, which I'm going to do right now, is to take one step back and look at it from a higher level and say, what's the point of having an item in the game if only a very, very tiny percentage of the player base has it, and it's such a quality of life improvement for people who use things like the Grace of the Elves?
Yeah, this isn't Hazelmere. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
this
it's not like a vanity like item.
No.
And, we can take a page out of Star Trek Online for this one, and, nothing in that game is rare. And the idea behind this is that with enough time, you can unlock the content through their reputation, their endgame reputation system, to get these sorts of upgrades. And then there's one step beyond that, which, is a 60-day venture to take a reputation tree from tier 5 to tier 6. It's about 60 days to do that. But by the end of that, you're going to have all the upgrades that upgrade your items in that reputation tree to Mark 13 Ultra Rare.
Yeah, and you should be able to substitute time and work and determination for money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, you should be able to do that.
I mean, you can still make these things rare, and you can still make them, have a value behind them. And if what they're going for with this is something that's going to be, one of those wow moments, like you said, like one of the vanity rings, like the Hazelmeres, then do it in a different way entirely with that, Make it some unique cosmetic or something that you get from that can be traded. Make it something like that instead. And then, you can take another page from ESO, the Elder Scrolls Online MMO, with that and the items that come into mind with that, is that you can go to a specific place and, grind out for these items over time, and you're going to get them over time. But, you can have this. It will be guaranteed, and you don't need to spend a max cash stack in order to get it. And I think that's where the problem comes in, is that this is something that's very much a quality of life item. It's max cash in the league with other vanity items that are just that vanity, like HSR and the Tony Matic, just to name a few. So, I think that's where the disconnect is that if you were to, just take one step back and say, should this kind of quality of life item be going out to more people? Or should it be toned down and be more of a vanity thing? And if they want it to be more of a vanity thing, then I think the alternative to what you would do for that is you would make a special version of of Grace of the Elves that you can just get from this.
Yeah.
That has, you know, that capacity on it that, you know, maybe makes you glow in a certain way or something. It would basically be an ultra rare version of Grace of the Elves in the same vein as Hazelmere's Ring, and you could have it have this drop rate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between this, I think. So, and yep, you're no, right. We see this differently than the J-Mods on there, and I think there's a part of the community that feels the same way we do on this, and I don't think anybody's ever expressed it the way you and I just did here. So you guys can let us know if you agree with that way or not. All right, then we come to the Raptor event, and this is how they ended the live stream, and they said that they want to do a part two of this live stream at some point in the future, and that's good. This was a good live stream. And the idea behind the Raptor event, in addition to providing an extra shot at rolling on the rare item drop table for certain bosses, was to tidy up some of the drop rate code behind the scenes. And they reiterated that drops are too rare for casual players. And this, they did say here, and this was interesting to see, the system is balanced so that people playing 18 hours a day don't spew masses of those items into the game economy. And isn't that interesting? What other game out there is balanced so that the people playing 12 to 18 hours a day don't ruin it?
This is why we can't have nice things, huh? I mean...
And it's been said that those players contribute a majority of the drops, and with that, they have to paradoxically balance towards that. And the Raptors event was experimenting with how players would feel of having a daily drop boost. And I think the thing that everybody felt with this is that it didn't work, because they said there was also a conspiracy theory that it didn't work. And from the people I was watching across a couple of communities, a few people had some good luck with it. But at the same time, there were other things that it just kind of popped and fizzled away. So,
well,
I don't know.
If you didn't feel it, you didn't feel it. It didn't happen. I mean, if you don't get anything every time, and we know that's just kind of how probability works.
Yeah. You can't expect with probability.
Right. And that it just, you didn't feel it like this. So nothing changed for you whatsoever.
And that's exactly what they said. If you killed the boss and didn't get anything, it was like the event didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to continue to look at this and see if they can find any other solutions. But the Raptors buff as an idea is not exactly dead, and it doesn't solve the problem for the majority of the community out there. Which I think we agree with, and kind of goes into where we're at with the wider discussion of drop rates and such, which I'm just checking on Patreon here. It's looking like that's what our next monthly bid is going to be. What if drops weren't as rare? So we'll have a discussion about that, I think, unless nothing changes in the next 8 hours or so, based on the time of where we're recording here. But
I think there's some people I would like to have on that one.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're thinking. So before we wrap up the show and talk about what we've been up to, I want to just draw some attention here to the RS Wiki. Because anybody who's used the RS Wiki in the last week or so will see a link to one of their forum threads where they say they're considering running ads so they can fund their technical staff. And they're asking their community about this. And what it boils down to is that the RS Wiki, as we know, has their core servers and whatnot funded by Jagex, but they have a technical staff team of two, known as Jaden and Kitty, who put a huge amount of work into the technical things behind the scenes when it comes to scripting and other sysadmin kind of things. And they say the line is blurred between paid and volunteer work, but for what they've been roughly paid equivalent to about £2 an hour for all the time that they've been working on it. So what they're considering is whether or not to run ads on the RS Wiki to get another source of income going on this so that they can pay these people properly. Because sometimes these people might need to take a call in the middle of the night to fix a server issue or something to that effect, should it happen. And with that, there's lots of questions in their community about whether or not they should run those ads. And based on their accounting, and I believe this based on what we've seen as well, Patreon or something like a Wikipedia-style donation system probably wouldn't raise the amount of money that they'd need to fund one full-time staff member on this. And with that, they're considering running the ads here. And I think people don't realize what a public good the wiki has become over the recent years for this. And I think before we get too far down this path, I'll say that my perspective on that is that they should absolutely do that, because the service they provide, I think, needs to be maintained at the level that they have. So they have my full support to run whatever ads they need to on that. How do you feel?
I feel the exact same way. I mean, I think you should be able to, you know, at the very least, just make a living off of the hard work that you put in. And I think there's no question about how much hard work has been put into the wiki. It is the go-to. It has kind of supplanted all of the other ways that we used to get information.
And that's where I wanted to go next. If you're finished, that is.
Yeah. No. I mean, I just totally agree and think that people should be able to reap some reward for their hard work. They're not trying to get rich. They're literally just trying to make a living.
Yeah. And you know, the guides and the calculators and everything tied in with the GE prices and all that, that is light years better than anything any fan site has come up with in the past in terms of guides and content quality. You know, everybody, of course, goes back to the classic days of RuneScape fan sites of Tip.it, Sal's Realm, and RuneHQ a little bit later on that. And yes, well, those guys had good content. The kind of content that you get on the wiki far eclipses anything those guys ever came up with, I think. And it's just because the number of eyes they have, the number of community contributors they have on that. Quest guides happen faster. They happen with higher accuracy and better pictures than they ever did from those websites. You get so many different perspectives on calculators and whatnot that you never used to get on fan sites. You get interesting opportunities tying all sorts of data together there. So I think the wiki does need to be funded at the highest level possible with this. So just a bit of a look into where the funding would go on this. It would go for additional technical employees to work on more feature development things, including archival tools, model viewers, maps and pathfinding tools, DPS calculators, and items that are also on a potential wish list that they have. Also grants for IRL summits, conferences, and get-togethers focused on wiki projects, and contracting a small business accounting firm so that people don't need to work out UK employment and tax law for people who aren't from the UK on this. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't see anything outrageous. No, we're not going to Vegas.
No.
Kind of thing, you know, it's like, yeah, this isn't the RNC.
Oh, I bet there's some kind of story there about what happened with them, but you can tell me about that later. But yeah, I mean, if you're an active user on the RS Wiki, go lend your voice to this. But I definitely want to see the level of support and service that we've had before on the RS Wiki continue with this, and I think taking it even higher is a very positive thing for their community to be aiming for. So I just wanted to actually take this moment here on the show and highlight this post, because, you know, the RS Wiki is this thing that everybody goes to, right? But very often do we consider how this thing is funded. Of course, they get some money from Jagex for the servers and web hosting, right? But when it comes to actually running the website and doing the work behind it, the grunt work behind it for the development work, there's people there that aren't getting paid for the kind of work that they should be doing. So 100% support on this. But
yeah, me too.
All righty. Well, with that, I think we can move on into our achievements of the week. And we only have a few of them this week.
All right. So starting us off, we have Good Bourbon. Love that name. 99 Herblore. That was on the 25th. And then on the 23rd, we have a Lithic with 99 Fletching.
Nicely done. And then wrapping up the small bunch of achievements this week, on the 20th, we have Pony Picker with 120 Woodcutting, Silly Cat 98 with 120 Dungeoneering, and Aliathic again with 99 Cooking on the 19th. All right, pick of the week time, and with this, we're going back to 1996. 1996, GoldenEye.
Good year, good times.
Of course, GoldenEye is the game everybody will remember. That was one of the launch titles for the N64, and it is back on the Xbox and Nintendo Switch. It has full split-screen support mode on both, including on the Xbox and the Switch. It has online multiplayer only on the Switch. I'll underscore again, online multiplayer only on the Switch. And this is a game that I think lots of people kept their N64s around for, because it was just a game that really never had a clear successor, and everybody always just liked for how it played, I think. But We're talking about this now because as of today, January 27th, it is now available on Game Pass and the Switch Online Store. So if you have Xbox Game Pass, you can go pick this up and replay that game that started back on the N64, one of the first games to utilize the Rumble feature of the Rumble add-on for the N64 controller. I think we all remember that. The battery-powered add-on for that. And, you know, you open it up and it'll just run, and it's just like going back. No need to worry about emulators. No need to worry about whether or not the game's going to work. Because I know there were attempts in the past to bring it forward with the GoldenEye Source Project, which I think we talked about on the podcast in the past before. But this one is just native to the Xbox, and it just goes. So I was actually... I'm not sure how this managed to skip my radar here, but it's actually something that I actually just heard about this week, and I was like, oh, that's actually happening right now. So I checked right before recording. Granted, we do record on Thursday evenings, and it's already out. It's already available. So if you have an Xbox with Xbox Game Pass, or you have a Nintendo Switch, you can go grab it, and you can go back, and you can play through GoldenEye on your Xbox or your Switch. And if you really want to, you can also play that legendary split screen multiplayer mode too, which I the number of hours that I put into that is just, you know, amazing, you know, come to think of it. So That's why this had to be pick of the week. And I, right before the podcast, I checked, and, you know, it's not the 27th yet, but lo and behold, it's there. It was only a 300 megabyte download. I'll give you that too. So I just went, and after the podcast here, I'm actually going to have another look at it. So that's the pick of the week, GoldenEye 007, available on Xbox Game Pass and Switch.
Best Bond game ever.
Yes. They tried to, you know, they tried to do other ones on the GameCube and such after that, but none of them really sat as well, I think.
Nope.
No. And you know what the interesting part about this is too? It works with the modern Xbox controllers. There's achievements. And it scales up to 4K if you have an Xbox Series X.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And I mean, that's like the best aspect of it, right? Make sure it looks good while yeah. you're doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's big.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's nice because they do have like versions of older games.
And I mean, you know yeah. how crappy it looks when you plug in something mm-hmm. like an N64 or an old 480i component video thing into a modern 4K TV, right?
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not. So, pick of the week. What have you been up to on RS?
So I am working on 120 Smith, which is right around the corner on the main. And then, I have actually been collecting souls on my Fresh Start account that is back, because I couldn't leave it alone. I was going to. We talked about this at the round table. I was only going to use it, on double XP, but I couldn't because I've just had too much fun with it. So I have been, collecting souls and, yeah, basically smithing on one, collecting souls on the other.
All right. And you're smithing even beyond 120 then?
Yeah, probably, but I mean, right now the goal is to 120 and. Yeah.
Oh, I already thought you had 120. Okay, fair enough.
No, I have 120 mining, but I'm working on its counterpart.
All right. You're gonna
very close.
You're going to get lots of money from that, right?
Yeah, I've made lots of money so far, yeah.
Good. Yeah, right. I remember a roundtable discussion now. Another feature available to Patreon members. All right, so we'll start with RS3 for me. I mentioned at the roundtable I finished the Yak Track. I finished the Yak Track and got the Frozen Shoulder Cape with that, so that was good. Finished it off with some Elder Divination to get the Maw, You're Not My Real Maw achievement, and then some fire making after that. But I also did take a detour to archaeology along the way, and I got another spear tip. It's my third one.
Another one.
One in 50,000.
Damn.
Those drops, yeah.
I feel like you should play the lottery, Shane.
Why? I mean, I get better things on RS. Things that I can use. And I don't have to put real money into it.
It's only a dollar.
Okay. I guess. But, I mean, I was under the impression maybe... And maybe that's how it is there, but you really don't get much for your lottery tickets that are only a dollar here. But in any case, I mentioned on RS3, and I mentioned this at the roundtable, that one of the goals for 2023 that Sirion and I are undertaking is that we're going for Quest Cape on Old School. So I've been working on that on the side. I've got a handful of the free-to-play quests done, lots of the very early ones, you know, just the kind of quests that don't need any requirements behind them, ones that you can use to get some levels along the way, been training the gathering skills, woodcutting, fishing, cooking. Fishing cooking is definitely the easiest one. Woodcutting is okay, it's pretty much the same, but the one that is most painful gathering-wise, as you can probably guess, is mining.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go back mm-hmm. to that old method. But that leads me, you know, to say that, you know, two of the main pain points for Old School have been the mining and smithing. But as well with that, the size of the mini map and just in general, the UI. So I got some UI scaling going to handle the font size differences on there, and that definitely helps. So I feel like I got the client to a way that I feel comfortable with it, so that's good. Just finished fishing contest earlier, so quick and easy path underneath White Wolf Mountain, so don't need to worry about getting attacked when moving to Catherby. And you can kind of guess why I'm eyeing Catherby at this point, knowing who I am, right?
You know, farm patch.
Yeah, farming patches.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the goal is going to be to do quests, get a lot of the skilling and training methods done through quests as possible on there. Kind of, I guess, the path people would have taken in Fresh Start to go for the questscape there. And just kind of, you know, see how it lands. Because Old School came out 10 years ago. We ignored it for the longest point in time. And, you know, there's already been some interesting revelations about how the game works. And there's been a lot of the content, quest-wise and otherwise, over the last, you know, 6 months that have kind of raised my eyebrows. Like, oh, okay. Oh, that's kind of interesting. That'd be fun to talk about somewhere. That'd be fun to experience. So that's kind of the angle that we're on right now. But, you know, of course, expect RSB&B update to continue being RS3 focused, since that's what we're based on each and every week. But I will continue to provide Old School updates here as they happen. It hasn't been that big of a teething issue. It's actually quite amazing how easily I'm able to kind of slip back into that old method of gameplay.
Like riding a bike, huh, Shane?
Exactly. And that's what I was going for earlier when I was talking about the combat systems, in that after doing some combat in Old School, I prefer RS3's legacy mode to Old School combat. Just because of how, you know, everything is structured with the tiers and whatnot. But that, I'm sure that'll become a more nuanced opinion as I get higher levels and as we go. So that's what I've been up to this week. Very interesting, to say the least. But I don't believe there's anything else for this episode. We'll be back next week. I think the plan for next week's update episode is to do our own Q&A here, kind of like how we always used to do questions on the podcast. And the plan is to get a bunch of your guys' questions about anything RuneScape related and effectively have our own discussion. And what amounts to a handful of mini monthly bits, so to speak, that we can do in, you know, an hour to an hour and a half or so, unless there's another headline update coming next week that we're not 100% aware of. So if you want to send your questions in for that, just head on over to update.show/ask, and you can pop your questions in that Google form right there, and it will let us get your question on the air next week, your discussion question. And, you know, feel free to submit anything you want. It can be as a simple question or can be a more at length discussion question for that. But update.show/ask. And, of course, if you want to have that episode automatically delivered to you when it's published, you can find it on any number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Casts, Spotify, Amazon, and more. You can find all those at update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See ya.